House Committee on Business and Labor for April 8th, 2013. Hey, we've got a lot of work to do, a lot of work sessions, so we're going to be gaveling all the public hearings in and out, in and out, in and out. We have many legislators here to testify. So I think that the first one we will start out with is... Are you the only one testifying on your bill? Okay. So why don't we start out with... I'll open a hearing on a public hearing on House Bill 3005. Representative Cobb, go to you. Jan, do you want to summarize?
Well, Madam Chair, committee members, this bill authorizes persons with a legal estate and real property to evict persons in possession of the real property under a lease or rental agreement for conduct that causes the place to be a nuisance if 24 hours notice is provided, and allows the landlord to terminate a rental agreement with 24 hours notice if the person operates for profit, a lottery, or other form of gambling. There is a dash one amendment before you that changes that changes the 24 hours to 72 hours.
Representative Cobb, welcome.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you, Chair Doherty and the committee members. For the record, my name is Betty Cobb, and I represent House District 22, Woodburn, Jervis, and North Salem. I will be very brief, as I know your agenda is full. This issue was brought to me by a constituent, and he has submitted a letter, and it's Bill Sweeney. I don't know if you have the copy in front of you.
The committee has that letter.
Okay, and actually before this constituent, who was beaten up on a nice evening when he was walking his dog, this house had come to my attention 3-4 years ago, and there's neighborhoods, I'm just going to go over this real quick. There are neighborhoods all over Oregon that have one or two houses that create disturbances for everyone else on that street. This issue was brought to me by a constituent living right here on Maple Street here in Salem. This is a street that I door knock every cycle, and it is a wonderful street with the exception of this one house, and it has historically had a tremendous amount of garbage always around it. Actually, one night when I was out door knocking, I was not accosted, but I was verbally abused by the people in this residence, which was happening on a regular basis to many of their neighbors. In fact, over 60 complaints had been filed with the Salem Police Department, and yet because they weren't in a certain sequence, they felt that they could not evict. And so that is the purpose of this bill, is so that it helps city councils and local police if there has been numerous reports and the facts are clearly stated that this is a nuisance home, then that those people can be evicted. I am here for any questions. I'm sorry I am kind of blundering through this morning, but I'm trying to rush to make good use of your time.
Okay, great. Thank you. And so the whole thing is that if you have a nuisance, and most of them are rentals, the rentals house, you have 72 hours to evict on noise and all of this kind of thing.
Yes, it's noise, verbal abuse, and this adds, that they're doing other things for profit, gambling, illegal activities, those sorts of things.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Are there any questions of Representative Cobb? Representative Fagan?
I'm assuming this would be for someone with a lease. So it essentially gives the landlord the right to break the lease and evict, as opposed to somebody who's not on a lease, because there's already a 30-day no cause that if someone's not doesn't have a lease, they could, for any reason, including that reason, they could do a 30-day no cause and evict them. So this would be, I'm assuming, for people that, maybe have a lease that would extend longer, but this gives them the landlord a reason to break the lease and evict in 72 hours. Is that right?
Correct.
Madam Chair, are we having more testimony on this today?
No one else has signed up.
Okay, then I do have a...
We'll double check.
Oh, okay. Well, I have a general question.
Okay, there's one other person, but we'll gavel in and gavel out, so... the other person maybe can.
Well, I guess I was just wondering if you have had any discussions with the landlord-tenant folks.
This morning.
Oh. How did that go?
And as we will, all of us know, the session is moving fast, and we have been invited to join their monthly meetings to get more information and to make sure that we are working as a team as this progresses. We worked
Thank
with
you.
The Salem, our city council person here in Salem, and we had their safety officer involved in the discussion.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
this
Chair.
Will continue. We're going to get through all of the legislators' bills first and then go back and revisit them. So I close the public hearing on House Bill 3005. And I open a public hearing on, we only have, Representative Wisnett has one, so we'll open up his. Thank you very much. Secretary of State. Okay, I open the public hearing on HM2.
Good morning, Madam Chair and honorable colleague, committee members. Last week, Representative Witt and I brought you a bill to help Oregon workers, and today I bring you a House memorial to help Oregon companies and workers. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, for hearing the bill. What House Memorial 2 does is sends a strong message that Oregon supports what the President of the United States is doing to protect industries, intellectual property rights, and that these efforts continue. It's a small one-page bill. If you look on line 20 and 21, it says what the bill's doing. We resolve that the state of Oregon supports efforts by the United States government to improve transparency in intellectual property rights, policymaking, and international trade negotiations. Madam Chair, lines 7 and 15 describe this impact and scope of the need to protect intellectual property rights. In summary, Oregon shares with all states the challenge of combating intellectual piracy and the counterfeit of intellectual property, such as pharmaceutical drugs, films, music, clothing design and branding, books, journals, inventions, and technologies that affect the quality of life. The sale of counterfeit products results in job and earnings losses, reduced tax revenue, and threats to the public health and safety. The industry that uses intellectual property rights generates $7.7 trillion in gross output and accounts for more than 60% of our total exports. Oregon's technology industries and clothing industries are at a significant danger of counterfeiting. I believe that House Memorial 2 is an easy action for this body to pass to demonstrate our support and protection of jobs we depend upon for the protection of intellectual property rights. Madam Chair, I've attached a copy of the new organization that President Obama has established, the Office of United States Intellectual Property Enforcement Coordinator, which we support. If you click through there, it talks about things they've done where property rights have been, they found pharmaceutical people use counterfeiting pharmaceuticals, automotive equipment, computers, parts, and if you look at enforcing our rights internationally, the seizure of 22,848 shipments, that the value would be $1.26 billion. Madam Chair, this is a problem in the United States, and it affects Oregon companies and jobs, and I would encourage this committee to pass this memorial, stating our support for what the President's doing and asking him to continue that work. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of Representative Wisnett? There's also nobody speaking in opposition of this, so...
And Madam Chair?
Yes.
I was hoping, I've worked with DOJ. This isn't a national program, but DOJ, their fraud people work with this to an extent. And I was hoping, Nike wrote a message saying that they supported that the bill was good. They're always conscious of not offending some of their customers. And I also was hoping that Mr. Decker from OBA would be here, but I'm not sure if he's going to come.
Well, and I know that this was something that last year in Business and Labor, Intel and some of the other, Microsoft,
good.
Brought issues like this with really the theft of their intellectual properties and things that they've done. And they were,
thank you.
Cannot speak for them, but I know that this was what they were looking at. So.
Good.
Okay. And the reason I ask that is because I'm going to close the public hearing on House Memorial 2, and I'm going to open a work session on House Memorial 2.
Madam Chair, I move House Memorial 2 be adopted.
Okay, Representative Kinnear moves House Memorial 2 be adopted. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, the motion Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Holdy.
Excused.
Representative Whiteman.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kennemer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. The motion passes. Representative Wisnett, if you'll carry it on the floor for us.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Memorial 2, and I open a public hearing on House Bill 3459.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Kathy McEwen, State Representative from House District 9. The Secretary of State introduced a bill, Senate Bill 143, in the Senate a few weeks ago, and I'm very, very honored to have the opportunity to work with her and to introduce a companion bill in the House. As was noted, House Bill 3459 establishes the Office of Small Business Assistance within the Corporations Division under the Secretary of State. The office will be staffed by two full-time employees who will help facilitate interactions between small businesses and state agencies. This office enhances the services the Secretary of State's office provides with the online portal that has been created to assist small businesses. This will provide business owners with an advocate that can help them through the process of establishing a small business or dealing with issues that come up in working with agencies in the state. It will also conduct reviews and investigations of complaints, helping the state identify bottlenecks and those places where we as a state can potentially improve the regulatory process, encourage growth in this vital sector of the economy. As we all know, we're coming out of a recession in this state. It's been a very, very challenging few years for all of us, and I think it's important that we continue to focus as time goes on not only budgeting well, being efficient, and managing the affairs of the state in an efficient manner and saving every dollar we can and spending them wisely, but that we continue to enhance the ability for our small businesses to grow, which is the backbone of the employment of our state. Large projects are great. We all want large projects in the state, which employ large numbers of people, but our small businesses really are a very important key in the robust return to a healthy economy for this state. And I think this is a really important way that we can provide opportunities for people who want to begin small businesses and people who want to grow businesses that already exist and begin to employ more people over time to help us regain a foothold in an economy that will continue to grow and help us come out of this difficult time that we've been in. With that, I will turn this over to Secretary Brown, who was kind enough to allow me to become part of this bill and the services that her office provides to our small businesses. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Secretary of State Kate Brown, happy to be here in support of House Bill 3459. As Representative McEwen mentioned, there's a companion measure in the Senate, Senate Bill 143. We introduced the concept after building the business portal. It was unveiled in July of 2012 this year, and that was a result of legislation you all passed a year or so ago asking us to work with a number of state agencies to create a business portal, which is a collection of websites. The portal's been very successful. It is the first state portal that is available on a mobile app, for those of you who have one of those. And it's also it functions a little differently than most of the state business portals because it's considered to be tax task-oriented as opposed to functioning on the life cycle of a business. When we built the portal, what was clear to me is that it would be very useful for the small businesses in Oregon to have a helpline, an advocate, someone to go to bat for small businesses as they work to get started or as they work to expand in the state of Oregon. So that came the concept. We looked at a number of models across the state, the United States. This particular model is based on the North Carolina model. We can do this within existing resources, and we would really encourage you to pass the legislation. As a result of the legislation, we can keep track of the complaints that when small businesses are struggling with state agencies, and we can also come up with recommendations and report back to you. So I would really encourage that you pass this legislation. I anticipate it will be going down to Ways and Means. I'm happy to answer any questions. I do believe you have the testimony of Peter Threlkell, who's here in the room with me. He is the director of my corporation division. He's also available to answer any technical questions. So thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, thank you. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Coast. I'm delighted to be up here as part of this distinguished panel, and I'm very pleased to be back before you again to talk about a great small business bill, because small businesses create jobs across Oregon, and I'm a small business guy. I'm here to provide a little color to the presentation today and put a real face on the kinds of challenges that small businesses face. And I wanted to give you four very quick examples of why an office of advocacy, an office of advocate or ombudsman is going to be really useful to businesses like mine. A couple years ago, we had an opportunity to file an unemployment hearing. And on the application, it says, tell us when you're not available. We said, we're going to be out of the country until the 10th of the month. Well, the hearing was scheduled at 8 o'clock in the morning on the 11th of the month, which seems awkward but practical. The problem, however, is that our post office doesn't open until 9 o'clock on Monday morning, so we couldn't even get the notice until after the hearing was complete and we defaulted. We appealed the default, and we were told in the decision that employers are responsible for checking their mail even when they're unavailable. The presumption being, I guess, that every business is like Intel or Nike and has an HR department and a lot of staff that can check these things. And I simply said, look, you know, when you're a small business, when you're a mom and pop, if you're unavailable, it means you're unavailable and there's nobody there to answer the mail. Who do you call in the face of that kind of insensitivity? Well, perhaps the Office of Small Business Advocacy. A couple of other very quick examples. I was going to talk to you about workers' comp, and we have to pay taxes on our employment. So we pay our employees bonuses based on sales. And the question came to us, is this an anticipated bonus or an unanticipated bonus? Well, the answer is, I don't know. We don't know whether we're going to reach the bonus stage or not. But if it's an anticipated bonus, you have to pay taxes on it. If it's an unanticipated bonus, you don't have to pay taxes. The answer we got from the agency was, go ahead and pay the tax. But we never did get any clear information on whether bonuses really are anticipated or unanticipated. We ran into a situation last year with the Department of State Parks, who wanted to change the rules regarding use of the beach. They wanted to establish a rule that said that any organized group activity would require a permit and $1 million of insurance to use the beach, an action that was going to cost small business up and down the coast lots and lots of businesses, discouraging weddings, discouraging family reunions, discouraging all kinds of activities in our state parks. Who do you call in the face of that kind of challenge? The Office of Small Business Advocacy. One last example for you very quickly. Just 2 weeks ago, this body passed out a new measure that would give veterans the day off on Veterans Day. A fine concept, and the bill included the note that if you were facing severe economic hardship, you could opt out of this new requirement. What's a severe economic hardship? And what are the penalties if you misunderstand the rule and don't give somebody the day off that the state says that they're entitled to? Again, small businesses don't have HR departments, they don't have lawyers, they don't have other people that can help answer these interesting questions. Should this measure pass, and I hope it does, they'll have one place they can call. I don't think that the Office of Small Business Advocacy is the answer to all our problems. I do believe, however, they're going to be very, very busy.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the panel? Representative Fagan?
Just a comment more than anything, because I'm obviously very supportive. I appreciate
Secretary of State Brown's opportunity to let me be a chief co-sponsor of this. I think it's a great bill, and I know that the Boley Office of Technical Assistance for Employers is incredibly successful. I actually, as an attorney for employers, a lot of the time have used it myself, and sometimes when there just isn't any case law on the topic, and you can call Boley's technical assistance line, and so this seems to me that the recognition that not all the questions that businesses have are employee-employer questions, that there's oftentimes dealing with regulatory agencies, and Boley is not, you know, always equipped to deal with that. And so this kind of expands the ability for a small business who maybe doesn't want to go hire an attorney for several hundred dollars an hour to answer a question, to have someone that they can call and reach out to and make their business run smoothly. So certainly think it's a great piece of legislation and commend the Secretary of State and the other co-sponsors for bringing it forward.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. And Madam Secretary, thank you for bringing this forward. As you know, my office has been working on something similar, and I'm glad that it's getting some traction. And I'm very happy to hear that you can do this without additional resources. That was a concern of mine.
Music to our ears.
So it is likely to occur, and I think that Representative Gomberg laid out a great case. Exact same things happen to small businesses across the state, and we need to be able to resolve these and resolve them quickly and have a state agency that, you know, that's developing a culture of positive small business, you know, advocacy and policy. So, great.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher, one of the notes I just wanted to share is that as a result of the economy, we're seeing thousands of, shall we say, Oregonians, usually at the retirement age, because of financial circumstances, are needing to start small businesses to assist with their family household incomes. So one of the groups that we're seeing is essentially baby boomers going back to work, starting their own businesses to assist in their family household income. So we see this as both very timely and very important.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Because we've got another panel coming also. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I like this bill so much. I'm actually going to take the liberty of signing on to it. I hope that won't prompt you guys to run to remove your names from it.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we have two other people signed up, Elizabeth Courchois and Jan Meekum.
Good morning, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Courchois with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. I'd like to thank Representative Fagan for stealing my testimony.
Oh, sorry.
For those of you who may not know it, Boley is made up of four different divisions, two which are enforcement divisions that you hear most about in this committee, the Wage and Hour Division and the Civil Rights for Anti-Discrimination Law Enforcement Division. The other two divisions we have are Apprenticeship and Training and Technical Assistance for Employers, which fields 20,000 calls per year from businesses. We help businesses navigate both state and federal regulation, but however, many of those phone calls that come in don't pertain to anything that Boley does. We act in many ways, many times, as a referral service. And we feel that this bill and the concept of an Office of Small Business Assistance would be very good for business. We have brought a -1 amendment to the bill. We did this in the Senate with the approval of the Secretary of State, and we thank her for that. And it just indicates on page 2 of your bill on line 35, it indicates that there a complaint is subject of a pending litigation or a pending contested case proceeding under ORS Chapter 183. Because we also have contested case proceedings at Boley, we have added or an agency action that could result in a contested case proceeding under ORS Chapter 183. And that seemed to be acceptable for everybody to bring it into conformance with the way we run things.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jan Meekum, the State Director of NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business. We represent 7,500 small business Main Street type businesses in the state of Oregon, most of which have less than 10 employees. So this is truly a small business bill that we enthusiastically support. I cannot reiterate any better than Representative Gomberg did the type of experiences that small business have and the escalation of calls to my office with complaints for agency difficulties and not having a place to go. One example was a workers' comp situation that had been going on for a member for a year and a half. She was just opened a business. It was very troublesome. We sent her to the ombudsman with workers' comp. It was settled in 3 days. What was going to be a $25,000 expense ended up being a $325 expense because she was incorrectly categorized as a business. It was an error. But she just didn't know how to figure that out or where to go to get help. So to have that in a general business environment would be so valuable to our small businesses. And I commend Secretary of State Kate Brown and those representatives and people that have signed on to this bill. We see it as a real critical bill and very helpful for a small business and to help them move out of this challenging economic environment that we're in. So, again, we enthusiastically support it. And thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of the panelists? Okay, thank you very much for your time coming this morning. That's the last we've got signed up. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on House Bill 3459? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 3459, and I open up a public hearing on House Bill 3263. Jan, if you could summarize the bill, please. Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, committee members, this measure requires the state of Oregon to grant paid sick leave to eligible employees who are victims of domestic violence, harassment, sexual assault, or stalking. It establishes an annual limit of 160 hours of paid leave for this purpose. It requires the state to inform certain employees of the communication in the workplace related to victimization of employees and to inform all employees of availability of leave. You have before you the -1 amendment, and it requires the eligible employee to exhaust all forms of their paid leave before using the paid leave established under the measure.
Okay, thank you. We have two people signed up, Terry Mizak and John Burgess. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Terry Mizak, and I am a citizen. I'm not representing a group except as a citizen. However, I do come from the perspective of having been a victim in the workplace. And thank you for hearing the bill this morning, and a special thank you to the four of you who are chief sponsors and co-sponsors. This bill focuses on bridging the gap by addressing societal and economic conditions that increase the risk for perpetration and victimization in the workplace. Increasingly, victims of these four crimes are vulnerable in the workplace. Why? Because the perpetrators know that's where they can find their victims. The state is Oregon's largest employer. This bill sends the message that the state of Oregon has zero tolerance for victimization in its workplace. There are two main components to the bill, leave with pay, and the second, a very important one, is training and education. Why leave with pay? Leave without pay can be a hollow right and empty gesture. It's a financial penalty on top of the victimization. Leave without pay can leave the victim short and unable to pay for basic necessities. The -1 amendments discourage abuse of paid leave by the requirement that all other leave first be exhausted. And this is an important component and intent of the bill, and it includes but isn't limited to sick, vacation, personal business, administrative, governor's day, and importantly, donated leave. The Centers for Disease Control, National Center for Injury Prevention and Control, tells us that one way to strengthen the response to survivors is through increased training. The notice provisions of this bill provide that. There is a -2 amendment in the works that does some cleanup that requires that the state inform its employees annually of the reasonable safety accommodations and the other elements of ORS 659A290. The notice, the intent behind that is that it be for the purpose of education and that it be written in plain language and hopefully provided both in hard copy in writing and verbally. Employee victims need to know and be reminded that the state has their back. The fiscal impact is expected to be indeterminate or minimal, and I urge your support with a due pass vote to the, I guess it goes to the Ways and Means after this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Burgess?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Burgess, and I urge you to vote also in favor of House Bill 3263. This bill would ensure that victims not be required to choose between protecting themselves and their rights and their paycheck. I'm an attorney and member of the Oregon State Bar, practicing primarily employment law. I think it's important to look at what this builds off of. ORS 659A.272 currently requires covered employers to provide reasonable leave to an employee who is a victim of domestic violence, harassment, sexual assault, or stalking, or the parent or child of such a victim. This leave is required in circumstances where the employee is seeking leave time to seek legal or law enforcement assistance or remedies and to seek medical treatment and obtain counseling, etc., and finally to relocate or take steps to secure their home in the event of domestic violence or sexual assault. This bill would require, as has already been stated, 160 hours per year of paid leave. This bill is a very significant step in the right direction, as the state's largest employer, as has been said. Extending paid leave to these employees would have the greatest impact, and it would not overly burden the employer since they're required per the Dash 1 amendment to exhaust their other leave before doing so. When these victims are required to choose between providing for their family and protecting themselves and their rights, they often have to choose the paycheck, and this law removes that difficult dilemma. We should not require a victim of domestic violence, for example, to have to choose between a paycheck and relocating to a safer home. Victims of stalking or domestic violence often need to find a safe place to stay while courts and law enforcement undertake to protect them. Meanwhile, they will also need to consult with an attorney and appear at judicial proceedings. This is a time when they can least afford to take a cut in their pay. In a civil case, as in my experience is most personal, and is that it's very likely that they will need to appear at numerous hearings and settlement conferences and trials. All of those require time off work, and they should be encouraged to pursue these remedies, not discouraged by requiring them to take a cut in their pay. In my practice, I regularly have victims of sexual assault and sexual harassment as clients, and who simply cannot afford to take time off work in order to vindicate their rights. And this bill would allow them the leeway and time to vindicate those rights. And for those reasons, I urge you to vote in favor of the bill.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any questions of the panelists? Okay, seeing none, those are the only two that signed up for it, so I'm closed. Anybody else would like to speak on 3263? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 3263, and I'm going to reopen the hearing on House Bill 3005. Just for the record, we did receive written testimony from Bill Sweeney in favor of this, and the other person signed up was Sybil Heath. I was looking for you.
Excuse me, Chair Daugherty, members of the committee, Sybil Head with the Oregon Law Center here. I very much appreciate Representative Comp's perspective on this bill, and I just wanted to answer the good Representative Thatcher's question about the Landlord-Tenant Coalition. The Oregon Law Center, with a number of other tenant advocacy organizations, is a proud member of the Landlord-Tenant Coalition, which also includes a number of landlord advocacy organizations, and we generally meet through the interim every year to examine and come to agreement about amendments to the Landlord-Tenant Act. And we just offered the Representative Comp that we would really be happy to facilitate further conversations about that proposal. We did, from the tenant perspective, I did have some concerns related to the short period of notice that would be required for eviction in that particular process, but certainly sounds like there is an issue there that would be worth further discussing, and we would be happy to help her try to resolve that concern for her constituents. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, thank you. That was the only other person signed up. Is there anyone that would like to speak on House Bill 3005? Okay, if not, I close the public hearing on House Bill 3005. And now we get to work, move to all of our work sessions, and we'll be going in order here of the work sessions. So I'd like to order a work order. And I'll open also a work session on House Bill 2654. Jan, if you could remind us of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, committee members, this is the social media bill. You have before you the Dash 3 amendment that deletes any of the provisions relating to educational institutions, and the Dash 5 amendment. And I think it would be best maybe if Jim Craven and Becky Strauss, they work on that amendment if they would like to talk to it.
Okay. And I know that Becky had a another commitment, so she might be in. If not, she said Mr. Craven could go through and speak for her.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Jim Craven with Tech America, and also recently deputized to speak for the ACLU on one paragraph of this bill.
Yes, yes.
It's a momentous day today. Yes.
There was a 12-page disclaimer.
Yeah. And you know, that was not an earthquake. The earth just shook a little bit here.
Okay, thank you.
The only, if you recall, a Friday and a half ago or two Fridays ago, there was a slight dispute over one provision in the I guess they were the Dash 4s at the time. That was resolved over the weekend in conversation between Tech America and ACLU. So on page 2, subsection 6, starts on line 14. This was the language, the kind of complicated language about if someone logs into a social network page from the company computer and the IT system inadvertently grabs that password. We're trying to sort that out. I think this language is just much, much clearer than what we had presented. Basically, if an employer inadvertently captures a password in the process of protecting their IT system, that does not count as a violation of the law. And that's really the only difference between the amendments that we discussed 2 weeks ago. And we support the bill, and we're good to go.
Okay, great. Are there any questions of the Tech America / temporary ACLU advisor?
I like the new ACLU advisor.
Actually, I'd like to make a comment. This is a bill that has been worked through a lot, and I, since it's my bill, I appreciate the work on behalf of Tech America, ACLU, hiring all of the different groups that came together, and my legislative assistant, Peter, who has been bird-dogging this. But I appreciate people coming together. It came out with a good bill, and I understand it might be a bill that will be maybe used in some other states. So
that's my understanding, too, Madam Chair.
Yes. Apparently, this is model language for the nation now.
Mm.
So anyway, but I appreciate all that you guys did very much. So
thank you.
Okay. Anyone else that would like to speak on House Bill 2654? Okay. Seeing none,
We're in a work session.
We're still in work session. So, Representative Kennemer.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2654.
Okay, Representative Kennemer moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2654. Is there any discussion? Okay, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash 5 amendments as well to House Bill 2654.
Okay, Representative Kennemer moves to adopt the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2654. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2654 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Okay, Representative Kennemer moves House Bill 2654 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Representative Fagan.
Just wanted to state for the record, because I had conversations with Becky, because an issue that keeps popping up in employment law now is whether certain statutes create individual liability for the supervisor as opposed to just liability for the employer. So I would have preferred if it got into the statute, but it did not. So I just wanted to state for the record that this is not intended to create individual liability, personal liability for a supervisor or person who would, you know, be the agent of the company on the part of this bill. So certainly if anybody disagrees with that, I'm assuming this is when they would say, well, I think that it does, because I'm certainly, with my discussions with the people presenting the bill, there's no intention to create personal liability. This is only directed at the company, the employer, I guess, to be clear, I should say.
Okay, so thank you very much for that clarification. Okay, any other discussion? Okay, see none. Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Thatcher.
Excused.
Representative Holdy.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Whiteman.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kenner.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. Okay, the motion passes. And
you gonna carry that?
I will have Representative Doherty carry the bill on the floor. Thank you very much. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 2654, and I open a work session on House Bill 2469.
Madam Chair and committee members, this measure extends the sunset from 2014 to the year 2020 for tax credit for pension income. Committee heard it March 18th. There are no amendments before you. The revenue statement has been issued. There's no fiscal impact, and it has a referral to the Joint Tax Committee.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Kenner.
Yes. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2469 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the measure be referred to the Joint Tax Credit Committee by prior reference.
Thank you very much. Representative Kenner moves House Bill 2469 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the measure be referred referred to the Joint Tax Credit Committee by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Thompson.
Excused.
Representative Wagner.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Holdy.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Excused.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kenner.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. Okay, motion passes. And there's no carrier needed on this bill. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 2469.
Well, Thatcher, too.
I think what we'll do is we'll do them all together. Gotta get my paperwork here. Open a work session on House Bill 2692. Jan, if you could summarize it.
Madam Chair and committee members, this measure is the teacher competence measure that was heard March 11th. The -2 amendment replaces the measure and requires school districts to make every reasonable effort to combine teaching positions in a manner that allows a teacher to remain qualified as long as they are competent for the combined position. Allow school district to transfer teachers to a different subject or grade level when making those staff reductions only if the teacher has competence for the new subject or grade level. Modifies the definition of competence to mean the ability to teach that subject or grade level, and looking back in a 10-year period as opposed to the 5-year period that's currently in statute. Also considered competent if they have educational attainments related to the subject or the grade level, or they have a willingness to obtain additional training or education related to that subject or grade level. Competence is also defined by the terms of the applicable collective bargaining agreement. Declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2013. There's no revenue impact, and we are waiting for the fiscal impact. The committee, if they choose, could adopt the amendment today, but not move out the bill.
Okay.
Fine.
Madam Chair, you want a motion for that? Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2692.
Okay, Representative Kinnemer moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2692. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Matthews and Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe the Dash 2 makes the bill better. It makes it easier for me to get there. I missed the public hearing on that. I was out during that week. So I apologize. I've got to get up to speed on the overall bill, and I appreciate we're not moving the bill. So I'll be supportive of the amendments, but I'm still concerned that we're going to use a 10-year window to look at somebody in terms of moving forward prospectively with budget cuts. I think that a lot of us that have been under contracts, we understand the importance of seniority. Longevity pays off, and I'm very concerned that this might just be a way, an unintended consequence of this could potentially be a great way for a school district to save money paying less for a new teacher than they would some of the senior teachers that are out there. So I have some reservations moving forward, but not on the Dash 2 itself.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Widener?
Yeah, I was just kind of curious how we ended up with this, and it didn't go through education. So I guess it's just dealing with the labor part of it.
It deals with collective bargaining, yeah. So and the collective, and the actually the layoff statute in Oregon law.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Okay, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the amendment is adopted. And what we'll do is we'll hold off until we've got the fiscal on this and for another day. Okay, thank you. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 2692 and open up a work session on House Bill 2672.
Madam Chair and committee members, this measure establishes workplace protections for domestic workers, and it makes a violation an unlawful employment practice, requires BOLI to adopt rules related to domestic workers. The committee heard the measure March 25th. There is no revenue impact. We're waiting for the fiscal impact on the Dash 5 amendments, and I believe Representative Gelser would speak to the Dash 5.
Okay. Yes. And also, before when she's coming up, we do have a letter in support for the record from Lori Bisbee. Hey, Representative Gelser, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Gelser, State Representative from Corvallis and Philomath House District 16. The Dash 5 amendment addresses the questions that were raised in the public hearing on this bill a couple of weeks ago. It clarifies the definition of domestic worker. It provides a definition for employer. It clarifies that the 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep are during a 24-hour period. It clarifies the areas on which an individual cannot be discriminated against or harassed to include to make it inclusive, and it clarifies that domestic workers should file complaints alleging violations of the wage and hour violations to the wage and hour division.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any questions about the Dash 5s? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Representative Kinnemer.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2672.
Okay, Representative Kinnemer moves to adopt the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2672. Is there any discussion? Okay, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted, and this measure will be carried over to the next agenda as we wait for the fiscal. So with that, I close the work session on House Bill 2672, and I open up a work session on House Bill 2214. Jan, if you could summarize.
Madam Chair, committee members, this measure exempts employees of attorneys from the licensure and other requirements on tax consultants and tax preparers. Committee heard the measure February 15th. I might like to point out that at that time there was discussion of an amendment regarding requirements for tax consultants. That amendment is no longer under discussion, so it is just the original bill. There is no revenue impact, and there is no fiscal impact.
Okay, we do have Mr. Wagner here if we have any questions. Tax Preparers Board. Okay.
Madam Chair, just I guess I do want to clarify. So the reason for this bill is so that those who are working under the supervision of an attorney, that it's clarified that any liability or any mistake or any, that all of their efforts are under the responsibility of the supervising attorney. Is that
Would you like to clarify that, Mr. Wagner?
Yeah.
I could say yes, but
that's my understanding.
Yes.
That's my understanding.
We'll
I just think we ought to have it on the record because
yes,
there are those who think they ought to be CPAs.
Yes.
There you go.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ron Wagner, Executive Director of the Board of Tax Practitioners, and the answer is yes.
Thank you very much.
And let me ask, if I may, another question then. Attorneys, by virtue of their licensure, have the right to do tax accounting as would a CPA, for example. So that's the other piece of this that comes together.
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Holvey, do you have a question?
Actually, Representative Kinnemer just asked it.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Okay, Representative Kinnemer.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2214 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Kinnemer moves House Bill 2214 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any additional discussion? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I feel that there is a level of underlying arrogance in this bill that's unusual even in this building. We had heard in testimony how important it is to have both sufficient knowledge and, secondly, adequate experience to undertake the preparation of taxes. This bill would allow zero tax experience if subcontractors were hired. I'm concerned that this is a little shop of horrors that's about to develop here. We've also had testimony that 360 hours of experience over a two-year period, 1 month in each of 2 years, qualifies someone to be a tax preparer under this bill. And despite these problems that were voiced on the record, this bill is going forward without amendment. There was an amendment proposed. Even the amendment is no longer up for consideration. We value the judgment of boards and commissions to determine competency for people to practice in this state. I think that's being ignored by this bill. I will be a no.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Representative Thompson.
I'm going to join Representative Witt in that position. I'm just a little concerned here that we haven't put enough thought into this. And generally, I am very supportive of spreading out authority as far as we can. But tax law, tax preparation is such an involved area. I'm just not sure I want to go this far, this fast, without a whole lot more sideboards on this thing.
Okay.
I'm looking at the possibility of the companion bill that will allow CPAs or the employees of CPAs to practice law or something like that, and that makes me even more nervous. So it's I'm just not there yet. I reserve the right to vote yes on the floor, but at this point, I need further clarification.
Yeah, well, the scary thing is the CPAs do when it comes to some of the tax law does. So
probably
that's
true.
Even scarier. Okay, any other discussion? Representative Matthews?
Thank you. And this just kind of sparks interest with the conversation. You know, I have in my family a longtime family member, well over 30 years of tax, CPA, Willamette Industries, now retired, and we have had discussions here about whether or not he could continue to assist with things without having the continuing education and all the other things that Representative Witt has talked about. And I just find it odd that this potentially has the impact of what's been described. I'm very, very concerned, and I'm not exactly sure, you know, what's driving this to be done. But my issue would, I'm not supportive of what we're trying to get done here. And I apologize for late notice.
Okay.
Representative Holvey.
Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, like others, have struggled with this bill a little bit, but it's my understanding that attorneys are already exempt from preparing tax returns, and just as employees of certified public accountants do some aspects of tax preparation without formally being licensed themselves because they're operating under the license of the CPA. And this just, I guess, equates the attorney's office in that same light where an employee of the attorney can help prepare these things, and but ultimately it's the licensed attorney who has a fiduciary responsibility and all the ethics and everything that comes with it, and is ultimately responsible for whatever tax preparation they make, which they're already allowed to do. So though struggling with it, I'm going to be supportive of this just based on it seems like it's just a clarification of existing law for an attorney's office.
Mm-hmm. And I just as clarification, because I know that Mr. Wagner and I talked about this, and it was this was actually one of the first bills that we heard, and I think the big concern was the additional hours for people who were coming in as enrolled agents from other states or had the enrolled agent designation, which makes them an enrolled agent for federal taxes, but not necessarily an expert in state taxes, in Oregon state taxes. And I know there was a lot of discussion in this. There was a lot of consternation. And so the tax preparers division went through and decided that there might want to be more vetting in this and more discussion. And that's why they took that amendment away. But again, leaving in with the idea of the attorney's offices, which don't deal with tax and tax preparation much, unless they are, that is their practice, which there we do have an attorney that deals strictly with the tax law. So that's kind of the little bit of the background as to what it is, and maybe we should have given you a little more information, and so we might hold this over just so you can ask questions of Mr. Wagner before we vote on it. But the attorney part was the original deal.
Representative Wagner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I actually own TurboTax, and that's what I use for my taxes. But and it's
I
cheaper
take
than
mine
a,
into
it's
a
much
licensed
cheaper than
tax
an attorney.
Sure.
So, I think one of the concerns, I'm just wondering, I'd like to get a little background on the attorneys, because, I mean, this kind of opens the door where they can just have people come in and run a program like TurboTax or something like that and start doing taxes for people, rather than going to an accountant, or they could set up their own shop for doing this because they're seeing a lot of the revenue that's being done there. And I don't know if we really want to open that door for them, or maybe we do want to open the door for them. So.
Well, and that might be a question we want to answer, because I have a feeling the door that would be opened would be straight to the disciplinary division of the Bar Association. So, and I know that there are, it's just not attorneys against it. I think today I'll start preparing taxes. I know there's some other things that they need to do, but that could be another question that we need to get answered before this goes on. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to second Representative Holby's comments. I think this is just a clarification of existing law. Attorneys already have this right. Attorneys already could do that right now. And I suspect that, frankly, this bill isn't even necessary. I think employees have attorneys because it's under the attorney's signature, and thus the attorney's license and the attorney's PLF policy, et cetera. Probably already can do this. This is, I think, just a clarification, and I recognize it's causing some angst. I respect that. And so if we want to scrap the bill, I don't think it'll make any difference.
Okay.
No offense. I think it's already the law.
But well, why don't we go through and get that clarification? We'll get it to you before we bring it in front of us again. Comfortable with that? Or
the motion was made, so we could
may I withdraw my motion then?
Yes. Representative Kennemer.
Madam Chair, I request to withdraw my motion.
Is there any objection to it?
Might be all right.
Okay, if we see none, it is withdrawn. And if we could get those that clarification, we'd appreciate it. Before April 15th? little tax humor there. Okay. Very little. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 2214. And I open up the work session on House Bill 2950.
This measure allows eligible employees to take family leave for up to 2 weeks to deal with death of a family member. It requires the leave to be counted towards the 12 weeks of authorized family leave. There's a -1 amendment before you that deletes proposed leave for purposes of receiving counseling or other medical treatment to cope with the death in the family. And it deletes the proposed changes to the statute regarding medical verification and scheduling of treatment. And it deletes reference to leave being taken on an intermittent basis. deletes proposed changes to statute regarding leave for teachers. There's no revenue impact, and there's a minimal fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you. Representative Kenner.
Madam Chair, if I may, first I'd like to ask a question. I believe that Representative Fagan has done some work on getting this amendment and clarification, and I believe that that has resolved some objections that were previously raised by me and quite a few others, and I wonder if she could maybe clarify before we may proceed.
Thank you very much. Representative Fagan.
Thank you, Representative Kinnemer. I was going to mention that during discussion. So I did meet with AOI. The amendment removes two provisions that were primarily troubling to them, intermittent leave and then the mention of counseling in the bill. So this amendment removes those objections that they had. In addition, I actually wish that JL was here because when we had met, he had expressed that they would support the bill, but I don't know that I can, because they're not here to officially say that they do, but he did express that to me that they would support it if we remove those amendments and if I was to do an interim work group on the ways to minimize conflicts for employers between the Oregon Family Leave Act and the Family Medical Leave Act, the federal law. And I am going to do such a work group over the interim. So that was the understanding that I had, but they're not here to officially say that. But it is certainly my understanding that there are no objections from AOI on this bill as it will be amended with this amendment.
Thank you. I appreciate that because Representative Fagan and Representative Kenny Geyer worked with AOI in their interim to come up with some of the concerns that they had expressed, and I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, on that note, I'm not clear either whether it was did not object or support it, and I'm not quite sure, but at least it's been integrated into what was already the existing amount of time, so it didn't add new time and resolved a couple of other issues.
And I know, especially going through and trying to resolve or get some of the clarifications on the differences or the overlap that we have with OFLA and FEMLA. So,
okay.
Thank you very much.
Ready to proceed with the motion?
Yes, I am, sir.
Okay. Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 2950.
Okay, Representative Kennermer moves to adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 2950. Is there any further discussion? Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just simply say, I won't say that they're in favor. I can say I had the same conversation. I think the concern was, and I'm very supportive, this work group is much needed, and it'll be nice, because I think that there's been several changes proposed to FEMLA and OFLA this session and other sessions prior to, and I think what they're trying to do is get, you know, AOI at the table with us, with you, and also some HR folks from their side of things to try to determine exactly what changes are we making, what can be done so that we don't have this kind of dual track system. And I'm looking forward to what comes out of the interim and appreciate Representative Fagan's desire to work on that and serve on that, as well as JL Wilson. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Kind of a shame that we even have to deal with this bill here. You would think that employers would just automatically do this. And I think 95-98% of them probably do. And it's a shame that we're having to do something here because of 3%, 5% of bad actors that are out there. This bill came about because of a constituent of mine. And that's why you see Representative Boquist and myself on the top of this bill. So I'm a strong aye in support of it, and I just feel that it's a shame that we actually do have people that would not give consideration like this out there in the state of Oregon. So.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions, discussion? Okay, is there any objection to the amendments? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted. Representative Kinnemer.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2950 to the floor with the due pass as amended recommendation.
Okay, Representative Kennemer moves House Bill 2950 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Okay, seeing none. Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
No.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kenimer.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. The motion passes, and we'll ask Representative Kenny Geyer to carry this on the floor, please. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 2950.
Rule suspensions?
Pardon?
Do you need some rule suspensions for the vote?
I do need some rule suspensions. Would you like to suspend the rules, sir?
Sure, there are going to be four of these motions. First, I move to suspend the rules to allow Representative Foley to vote on HDAR 2.
Okay. HM2?
Sorry, HM2.
Yeah. Do I have to gavel this? Or just, is there any objection to suspend the rules?
I vote aye. Thank you, Madam Chair
and aye.
Vice Chair Barton. And Vice Chair Kenimer for passing the note.
And two coming up for Representative Thatcher. I move to suspend the rules to allow Representative Thatcher to vote on House Bill 2654.
Okay. To suspend the rules, okay. Representative Thatcher, vote on House Bill 2654.
The question, was it amended at all? Or?
Madam Chair, committee members, that bill was amended with the dash 3 and the dash 5. It's a social media bill, mm-hmm. and on the dash 5, we heard that ACLU worked with Tech America and reached an agreement.
Okay, all right. My vote is aye. Thank you. Okay,
thank you.
Madam Chair, I move to suspend the rules to allow Representative Thatcher to vote on House Bill 2469.
Okay. Any discussion? Any objection? Okay, Representative Thatcher.
My vote is aye.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I move to suspend the rules to allow Representative Thompson to vote on House Bill 2469.
Okay, is there any objection to suspending the rules?
Vote aye, thank you.
Okay, Representative Thompson votes aye.
That's all on my count.
Thank you very much. We do have a few bills to carry over. We'll be carrying over House Bill 20, and this is for information and getting fiscals and so on. House Bill 2692, House Bill 2672, and House Bill 2214. Okay, is there any other business today? It can be a busy week. Today's the deadline to schedule everything, so we'll be doing that. The council should be out pretty soon. Okay. No other business. I adjourn the meeting of the House Committee on Business and Labor.